Art and Angela get to go out and get away from Justin. Right, Justin? I mean, they get to go see Jesse for a little bit. No raging parties while they're gone, right, Justin? No, moms can always tell, right? So, last week, Art mentioned something about I was wearing flip-flops to church, and we were talking on the way home. I said, Grady drew attention to my Casper White feet because I don't wear flip-flops that often. Even when I go to football practice, like sometimes Saturday mornings when we're just watching film, the kids make fun of my feet. Oh, you're blinded. And so when we talked about it, I told Faye, I said, hey, Jesus doesn't care if I wear flip-flops to church. And she says, but next Sunday, you're up in front of everybody. You're not wearing flip-flops. And so Jesus may not care, but Faye does. All right, so no flip-flops today for me. Today's message is more of a history lesson more than it is a spiritual lesson. And it comes out of about July 4, somewhere right around that time. I was looking at Facebook, social media. We're all guilty of social media. I say social media gives voice to the stupid, but I'm on it too, so it just tells you a little bit about me. But I had a former student who made a comment or post about the United States is not a Christian nation, and that because of the First Amendment, the separation of church and state, it proves that we're not a Christian nation. And I wanted to reach through my phone and shake their tonsils. But I didn't say anything, because I usually, when it gets to controversial things on that, I don't say a whole lot on comments and stuff. But I just wanted to say, you're so wrong. You're so wrong. Our country is a Christian nation, founded by Christian people. Now, some of our founding fathers, they had been aware of what was going on in the world many years before, going clear back, basically starting with Gutenberg. Johannes Gutenberg in Germany invented the printing press, which allowed them to make books much cheaper than ever before. All right? Most times before that, books were all handwritten. Imagine rewriting a Bible, how long that would take. You said it took people anywhere from 2 to 5 years to handwrite a Bible. Well, if you're putting 2 to 5 years into something and you're going to sell it, you're going to sell pretty handily to make up for all that time, right? So books were expensive. Matter of fact, some libraries had books on chains so you could go and look at them, but you couldn't take them, okay? Gutenberg invents the printing press, which he's able to produce 200 Bibles in 1 year period, all right? A lot cheaper, right? And he's able to produce them faster. This thing and I always fight, and it always wins. Let's see. Which made I told you it always wins. Yeah, we'll see. Can you still hear? Okay. This allowed books to become a lot cheaper, which basically leads to the Protestant Reformation, which Martin Luther, no, not Martin Luther King Jr., two different guys, right? Martin Luther basically starts the Protestant Church, which is our church, is many breakups later, basically comes from the Protestant Church, right? And this allowed, this happened to take countries, some of them going only Catholic, some of them only going Protestant. And our founding father saw that there was a lot of fighting going on in the name of religion. All right, the Hundred Years' War, all right, fought between France and England. Guess how long the Hundred Years' War lasted? 116 years. That's kind of a trick question. 116 years of fighting took place because the Catholics and the Protestants couldn't get along. The only reason 116 years war started or stopped is because both countries run out of money. They save up enough money and they fight another war called the 30 Years' War. Guess how long that lasted? 30 years, right? And the only reason they stopped that is because they run out of money. They save more money and they fight another war called the 7 Years' War. Probably figure that one out by now, right? And finally, the English win, which gives them right to North America, Canada, that kind of stuff. But our founding fathers had seen that. They were smart enough to realize we don't want a national religion. In the First Amendment, it says there should be no, the government shall not establish a church or interfere with your religious beliefs. Meaning, they're not going to say you have to be Catholic or you have to be Protestant or you have to be whatever. They wanted freedom to worship is what they wanted to worship. And so that's kind of the founding part of it. And I want to show you some examples of how God helped these men and how these men, in turn, praise God for it. All right? And I wanted to tell this former student that as well, but I will someday when I catch up with them in person, not on Facebook. One of the most original parts of our government is the Declaration of Independence. We all know July 4, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was signed. Written mostly by Thomas Jefferson, he was working in a committee of five people, John Adams, Ben Franklin, Robert Livingston, Roger Sherman, and Jefferson were all working together. John Adams was too busy trying to raise some money. Franklin really wasn't in great health quite at that point. He was overcoming a flu. And the other two spent most of the time at a bar drinking. So Jefferson did most of the work. All right. But in it, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. All right. When they said that, they were talking at that time, not just all men, they were talking about the men in America that wanted the same rights as Englishmen. They said, we hold these, you know, we want this ability to have the English rights, and English refused it. And so these guys were getting ready to basically write a big breakup letter with England. That's what the Declaration of Independence is. If you ever got that, had that boyfriend or girlfriend in junior high and they wrote you a letter to break up with you, this is what America was doing, right? They had tried to reconciliate with England for a long time, and it just wasn't happening. We think of 4th of July today as this big celebration. Maybe you have, you know, the hot dogs, the apple pie, the fireworks, and all that kind of stuff. But on July 4th of 1776, when the majority of the men signed it, there were still some more that would sign it later that weren't in Philadelphia at that time. It was a completely different look. When the last person signed their name, it got eerily quiet. Men started to cry. They fell on their knees and started to pray. This was going to be a momentous life-changing event that if they lost this war, there's the names of all the people that were going to die. John Hancock, the president of this assembly, you know, he's the one that signed his name on it real big so King George could see it without his glasses. He made the comment, he says, now we must surely hang together. And Ben Franklin, who very revered by the guys at this time, he gets up and says, yes, we should hang together or we'll surely hang separately. They knew this was going to be a momentous thing. It wasn't a day of celebration at that point. It was a day of worry. It was a day of fright. What have we done? These guys put their wealth, their families, their own health, their own lives on the line by signing this. I have to use my spectacles as well. Samuel Adams stood up and he says, we have now restored the sovereign Lord to the world, in whom alone men ought to be obedient. John Hancock went on to say again, let us humbly commit our righteous cause to the great Lord of the universe. Let us joyfully leave our concerns in his hands. These were Christian men who were looking at God for help, right? One of the first things they did after the signing, the first act they did was declare a national day of prayer, where they asked the nation to pray. And keep in mind, they said, they didn't say it out loud, but they were saying, we don't care if you're Protestant, we don't care if you're Catholic, we don't care if you go to Open Arms or the Church of Christ, whatever, pray. Because they knew this was going to be a difficult thing, right? Here they are, a bunch of 13 not very well connected states, all right, colonies basically at that point, who was fighting the most powerful military in the world. Their hope was to drag it out long enough that England would get sick of them, all right? And they weren't looking, I think they would have been happy, even if not with independence on their own, but if the King George had just said, hey, we'll give you the same rights as all Englishmen, I think they would have been all right with it. One of the things that happened right after this, and some things, you know, you don't learn in a textbook at school. They can't put everything in there. There was a great revival in America at that point. A lot of people started turning towards God, but all the Bibles had been printed in England. Well, there was no trading with England at this point. And so there was a big shortage of Bibles. People couldn't get their hands on them. There was a guy who the Continental Congress gave permission to print the Bible, because you couldn't print the Bible without a government permission. I don't care if that was in America at the time or England, France, but you had to have the government's permission to print the Bible, because they wanted to make sure the Bible wasn't changed by printers, and so they had to get them all checked out and, you know, proofread and all that stuff by government officials. All right, and that goes back to a Bible that had inadvertently changed some of the Ten Commandments to make them look reversed from what, thou shalt commit murder. Okay, that was just a mistake, but they got printed out, and the governments just wanted to make sure that they were correct. So the government, they gave a guy in Philadelphia permission to print Bibles, but he's just one guy working. One of the first things they did, and keep in mind, our government, Continental Congress, didn't have money. All right, the thing's winning again, I can tell. Our government didn't have money. But one of the first things they did was they ordered and bought 20,000 Bibles from Scotland and the Netherlands. Now, our army, which you'll see here in a little bit, was not very well funded, not very well fed or clothed, right? And many people say, well, they should have spent the money on the army instead of Bibles. Roger Sherman made the comment when they were voting for this that, yeah, the army can't eat Bibles, but God's the only one that can save us. And so they ordered these Bibles, even though they didn't have money for them. All right? One of the early battles of the war is the Battle of Long Island. George Washington's outnumbered 8,000. He has 8,000 troops. The British has 20,000 troops. And George Washington's running for his life. He and his army are doing the best they can to get out of Long Island. And they get trapped with their backs to the East River. Now, George Washington, he prayed. He prayed all the time. He ordered his men to pray quite often. He would have days where the general orders were, pray for food today, or pray for safety, or asking the men to pray for things that they needed. Man, daggone it. Jason, what am I doing wrong here? Is that going to work? Maybe you need to read it, have it up there higher. Keep talking. He says, just keep talking.
Just
George Washington's and his army had their back up to the East River. And it looks as if the British really want to, they can annihilate the last of the Continental Army. But for some reason, General Howe, the British leader, doesn't attack. Is that working? Thank you. He doesn't attack for 2 days. He sits out and just waits. And no one knows why. They even asked General Howe afterwards why. And he just kind of made the comment that he don't know why. He just didn't issue an order to go and attack. I think I know why. Our soldiers were praying for help. And he didn't attack, which allowed a bunch of people from Massachusetts to come in to help our Continental Army. And these guys, they weren't soldiers, but they were fishermen. And they came down the East River with a bunch of boats. They were going to evacuate our army across the East River. But George Washington, again, was very nervous about this. He ordered many of his men to stay out and light as many fires as possible, clang pots and pans and make noise to make the British think that they're still there. All right? Meanwhile, he's going to try to evacuate as many other ones as he could. As the evacuation starts, a fog comes in. This fog is not over the river. It's not on the other side of the river. It's right where the Americans are at. And there's guys who write about it later, said the fog is so thick that if you stretched out your hand, you couldn't see your fingers. We might have a delay on that day, right? We might have a 2-hour delay at school that day. Yeah. The only thing better than a 2-hour delay is snow day. That's right. That's right. Imagine a fog so thick you can't see your hand at the end. The British aren't going to attack. Meanwhile, on the river, George Washington and his men are escaping. There's no fog there. As the fog lifts, just as the last two boats are sailing across, and General Howe had sent some British soldiers in to kind of scout out and see where the Americans are up to, and they find the camp empty, and the last thing they see is the last two boats escaping. That's God. That's God. The first thing upon hitting the East River, what does George Washington do? He doesn't order his men to take off. He says it's time for prayer. And he leads his 8,000 men in a prayer. You can't tell me that the people that started our country weren't Christian people. The next year, you guys know the story of Valley Forge, right? Where our army is spending the winter. They're 20 miles from the British, all right? But you didn't fight in the winter back then. And the American army certainly wasn't up to it. General Lafayette, who was from the French, who was sent here to help train the Americans, he writes that, how do I train a bunch of starving, naked boys? Our men were promised when they joined, you will get 1 pound of meat and 1 pound of bread every day. During the winter, they were getting, for a meal, they were usually getting a spoonful of rice and a spoonful of vinegar. And that was their meal for the day. All right? They weren't surviving. There were men that were starving to death. George Washington writes in his journals that 1/3 of his army was maybe fit for combat. Men didn't have shoes. They didn't have winter coats. Lafayette writes in his journal that many of the men, as they come out in formation, have frostbitten toes, that you can see their whole nakedness through what few straps of clothing they have. And his job is to train these guys. All right? Why do the men keep fighting for George Washington? Why do they keep enduring this? Every day, George Washington ordered his men to pray. Pray. Now, one thing George knew that he didn't tell his men yet were the French were sending supplies. He didn't want to build their hopes up because he thought probably the supplies aren't going to be here in time. And a lot of these men are going to starve to death before they get here. But every day they prayed that they would get something to eat, clothes on their back. In March of that year, early March, the river that they were camped near looked like it was starting to boil. And many of the men started to become afraid. They weren't sure what's going on, but there was all kinds of ripples all over the river. Many of the men that knew what it was went flying out into the river with their shovels and pitchforks and buckets. There was a fish migration coming through. Shad, about that big, not very bony, great for eating. And the men were starting to take shovels and just throw as many shad up and as they could onto the shore. Other men went out and started gathering pieces of wood so they could block the fish from escaping, so they could get them. And thousands of shad come up onto the shore where they can feed their men, and they start drying it out so they could have basically fish jerky for later. Their prayers have been answered. What's amazing is that fish migration from that normally happens every year never happens in March. It's June that it happens. They knew it happened in June before that. It's happened in June every time since then. But that year, it happened in March. God can feed with fishes, right? He can feed with fish. This survived, allowed them to survive long enough that the French started getting supplies in. Lafayette can start training the soldiers and become basically professional fighters. Lafayette's very, very popular, real good friends with George Washington. So much, in fact, that if you go to Washington, D.C. now, you have the White House, and right behind the White House is a park, and it's called Lafayette Park. It's named after him. He is such a good friend of the Americans. He was very, very well needed in the fight for the, in the war. Again, right after the fish came up and the men had time to fill their bellies, right, and take care of things, Washington orders all the men to pray for things. And he says, "Our sovereign Lord has fed us like Jesus did with the fish." You know, you don't read that stuff in textbooks, right? You don't know all those ins and outs. These guys believed with their heart that God was on their side and was going to help them. God answers prayers. God answers prayers. At the Battle of Cowpens, later on in the war, Americans are again crossing a river. Now, George Washington wasn't with this group, but they're crossing a river to get away from the British. And the British are an hour behind them. And the Americans aren't doing well. They had just been defeated in a short little skirmish, and they were trying to hightail it out of there. They cross the river, and as the British show up an hour later, the river starts to flow faster than it had all day. There was a storm upriver, and that water had come down. And then by that time, it was moving so fast, the British couldn't get across the river for 3 days. Again, the first thing the Americans did were prayed about it. Prayed about it. Ben Franklin, one of my favorite guys to study because he was a little crazy, right? Ben Franklin comes up with all kinds of of interesting things. You know, he invents the bifocals. He invents all kinds of stuff. He's kind of a rock star kind of guy at this time. And you don't hear about him too much in the revolution because he wasn't in America. He was in his 70s at this time, early 70s. He wasn't always in great health, couldn't hear very well at this point. And so since he had rock star status, probably wasn't good enough to really fight, they decided to send him to France to raise money. They need money for the war. All right? And he goes and he tries to ask a lot of these rich people for money, and they won't get it. All right? They don't want to give money to what they think may not be a winning thing. Right? So what does Ben Franklin do to raise money? He starts flirting with the wives of those rich guys, right? And he flirts with them. And when the men were like, "Why would you just leave our women alone?" And he's like, "Well, donate to the cause, right? Donate to the cause." And then they donate money and he goes flirts with somebody else, right? But he raises a lot of money this way. After the war, we know, you know, the Americans win. After the war, we try a period of time for the Articles of Confederation, which was a type of government that really didn't work because they didn't have a president, the Congress really couldn't do anything. And so they start to get together in Philadelphia for the Constitutional Convention. They want to rewrite our government and create a new government. And many of the people there had been there and they'd worked all summer. And it got nowhere. There was a lot of arguing, a lot of infighting, a lot of people very upset with each other. And Ben Franklin's there now. Now, Ben Franklin at this point is in his 80s. He usually doesn't speak much anymore because they don't know, but he probably had some kind of throat cancer at this point. They weren't really good with that kind of stuff back then, but he didn't speak very well. He usually wrote everything down and then had somebody read it for him. But as they're fighting, arguing, he gets up in front and asks George Washington, who was the leader at the Constitutional Convention, says, can I speak? Now, when he spoke, people would listen. He's an older guy. He's a famous guy. At this point, he didn't speak a whole lot. So if he wanted to say something, people wanted to hear it. I want to read to you, this a little bit lengthy, but I want to read to you what he said. Make sure I get the right spot. In the beginning of the contest between America and Britain, when we were in danger, we daily prayed in this room for divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence. Now, a lot of the founding fathers didn't use the word God. They used things like creator, providence, sovereign. I think that was more to show we're open to everything, right? If I say God, well, which God is it? Like, it's just God, right? They didn't want this Catholic, Protestant kind of stuff going on. He says, I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see in this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, it is probable that an empire cannot rise without his aid. We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord built the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall fail like the builders of Babel. I therefore beg to leave henceforth prayers employing his assistance from heaven and its blessing on our deliberation to be held in this assembly every morning, and that one or more of the clergy in this city be requested to officiate in that service. Now they didn't have any money and they were worried, well, how do we pay them? Well, they got volunteers. And every day pastors would come in and give a blessing and a short message. They did more in the first 5 days after that started of setting up our government than what they had done in the 5 months previous to that. We know that God puts those people in power, right? God wanted this government. I really believe Christianity starts in the Middle East. It comes to Europe and in Italy. And Christianity gets, for better term, gets religious, controlling, right? When I talk about religious, it's controlling. Jesus wants us to be free. And as it comes through the West, either through Germany, England, there's more and more freedom. But only when it comes to America is it truly open for freedom. God blessed this country because he saw what they were trying to do. Does our country have faults? Sure. There's things that don't go right here. But we try to correct them. No country in the last 150 years has done more to spread Christianity around the world than the United States. Do we have more that we need to do? Sure. All right. God has blessed us. Our founding fathers were Christians. So if you go out there, if you hear that argument that says we're not a Christian nation, tell them no. They need to look at their history outside of textbooks. All right. Outside of textbooks. They're not going to put in there that they prayed every morning before they started to create our country. They aren't going to say that George Washington's men were so happy to have those fish that the first thing they did was pray. That they prayed for things that came about later because they had faith. They're not going to put that in a textbook. But they were Christians. So what can we do in our country? We as Christians need to know that we live in a Christian nation. And when those things come up that we see where people are saying things about Christianity or things like that, we need to be able to say, these founding fathers, they were Christians. Yeah, we have a separation of church and state because I may not want to worship like you. But you can worship what you want. I worship the way I want. That's the greatness of it. As Christians, what can we do? Vote Christian. In the 2020 election, I think that was what it was, 63% of Christians didn't vote. 63% of people who are registered Christians that could have voted didn't go. That's a problem in the Christian church today. A lot of people look at the candidate and see, does it have a little D behind it or a little R behind it? I wish they had put a little C behind it if they were Christians. Right? Let us be able to vote that way. That is our duty, is to vote those people in. We as a country, as Christians, cannot sit here and not vote in elections. We live in the most free country in the world. God's made us, allowed us to create that free country. Use it. Use it. You know, I had a relative one time that she would complain about a president, didn't matter who it was, right? Whether it was Democrat or Republican, she'd always complain about the president. And I said, well, did you vote for him? Well, I didn't vote. Then shut up. You have no right to complain if you don't vote. If you don't vote, you have no say. You gave up that right to have a say when you didn't go to the polling station. All right? I hope you got something out of it. I've been reading this book. It's called America's Provincial History, and it talks about America and how God has played a role in American life. And I've really enjoyed it. It's really opened up a lot of eyes to say, okay, that makes sense. I didn't know. I knew that the soldiers at Valley Forge had got fed by fish, but I didn't know it happened 3 months before it was ever supposed to happen. That's only God. That's only God. Please stand. Getting parched. All right, let's pray. Father, we thank you for the freedom you give us in this country. We thank you, are thankful that the people that founded this country were Christian men. They understood where religion got in the way, and they didn't want that to be part of it. So they created a country in which you could choose. I'm thankful for the people here that chose to come here. We as Christians need to keep honoring you and keep asking for your blessings upon our country. It's only through you that our country will survive. We know that every government of the world has failed at some point or another, but we know that those nations that hold to you will last longer than any other. We ask that you bless Art and Angela this week as they travel. Give them safe travel back. We are so thankful that they get a chance just to get away. I know school starts this week, and we ask that you give a safe blessing for those that are in the school, whether they're teachers, cooks, bus drivers, students, whoever they happen to be. Give them blessing, keep them safe, and let them make a life, at least one life, different this year. And I ask that you bless these people, keep them safe until they come back again next Sunday. In Jesus' name, amen.